You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
And now, two guys who go together like bacon and eggs. Your host, Lou Costanzo, and Dr. James, don't call him Jim, Roberts.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. And tonight's episode is The Next Phase. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
Hi, I'm Colin from Warwickshire in England.
And I'm James from London.
The synopsis for tonight's show is Geordi the Forge and Ensign Ro are believed to be dead after a transporter malfunction. However, they soon discover that their state may not actually be quote-unquote death. This is the 24th episode of Season 5 of Star Trek The Next Generation. It was first aired on May 18, 1992. It was written by Ronald D. Moore and directed by David Carson. I'd say they did a pretty fairly good job. Guest stars include Michelle Forbes as Ro Laren, Thomas Capaci as Mirok, Susanna Thompson as Varel, Shelby Leverington as Brosmer, Brian Cousins as Parham, and co-starring Kenneth Mezeral as Ensign McDowell. So what do we think about this episode? Colin, you go first.
My thoughts on this are, I like this episode. I mean, yes, there's some bad science, which I dare say the doc will get into. But it's an enjoyable episode. It's an interesting premise. We get to see a bit more about the Romulans, and we get an insight into a ship from another angle, because it's not a bird of prey, and it's not the Daleks. So, yeah, I like this episode. There's some flaws, which I'm sure we'll get into, but overall, I think it's an enjoyable episode to watch. It's a good romp, shall we say. But, you know, we'll get more into it as we get into the show. So that's my thoughts.
All right, guys, thank you. And my initial thoughts for this episode is, you know, my greatest fear in life is if I ever become invisible and begin to walk through walls, furniture, people, pets, and, you know, and I'm afraid that I'll also fall through the floor into the ground and keep going to the center of the earth until I eventually melt. So I am thankful to this episode for today that reassures me that the bottom of my shoes will remain solid, you know, when everything else isn't. It's a tough one. It's a good episode. I like some parts of it, some I don't, but we'll get right into it and we'll talk about it. Okay, so let's see here. As we start out, the Enterprise is at high warp trying to rescue a Romulan ship that is about to implode. Doc, school us.
Get your books out, kids, because Dr. Roberts is about to school ya!
Can you explain the difference between an implode and an explode? Because eventually they jettison the core, and he said it's going to implode, but yet it sure looked like an explosion to me. Maybe I don't quite understand what implode means.
Oh, okay, so usually when they refer to that, right, is that...
So the ship actually doesn't just implode. It implodes and then it explodes. It clearly, that's the process there. So the thing that, I think that the best way of thinking about it is that, think about where the stuff goes. So if the stuff goes kind of outwards into, you know, outwards from the explosion, that's an explosion. And if things first, at least, kind of come inwards because there's like a vacuum and stuff, that's technically an implosion. So if you had, you know, if the pressure of the detonation is to push outwards and to push kind of like pressure outwards, then explosion. If the event causes the pressure to kind of come inwards, then that's an implosion. So like if you're going to go down into the sea, there's a lot of pressure on the outside and there's something wrong with your submarine. The submarine doesn't explode, it implodes because the stuff outside is at a higher pressure kind of forced in. I mean, that's as far as I'm aware. Maybe I'm just a gibbering idiot, though.
No, it almost sounds like a backdraft in a fire. Just before an explosion, you get that backdraft, and that's what firefighters fear almost the most, is a backdraft.
Sure.
And interesting. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah, because you're right. Because down in the sea, the submarine actually will compress itself. And that's how they get squashed to death. Instead of exploding outward. That makes perfect sense. Okay. Okay, so here's something also I learned, that to Deanna, she looked very worried in this, in the beginning of this episode, and I think Picard needs hearing aids. Because I don't know if you heard the Romulan clearly, but I did. But there's a couple things I was wondering about. On the communication, they said, Enterprise, what is your time of arrival? We're facing an imminent core breach. Picard, who needs hearing aids, asked him to repeat that, but they didn't. A little bit later, when Riker, Worf, Geordi, and Ro beam onto the ship, he says, we're from the Enterprise. And one of the guys says, the Enterprise? There's twice in this episode that the Romulans actually seemed puzzled by something and what was going on. I was wondering if you guys detected that. Why would she have said, or why would he say the Enterprise? And later, when we find out there's at least 73 Romulans alive, the woman says, 73? Did you detect that and get a beat as to why?
Okay, so I didn't. So I thought that the issue about Enterprise being mentioned was just because to put across a state of confusion. Just so that the person, you know, wasn't necessarily aware of the Enterprise arriving. So I thought it was just there as a way of just saying, hey, you know, these guys aren't on the front foot. With regard to the 73, and of course they were at least 73, which clearly means that there's probably 74, which, you know, gives you your magic number. I thought that what she was really saying there was just, we must have lost a lot of people. So I thought it was just you know, it's a crew of 300, and now you can only find 73. So I took it as that.
Yeah, I took the confusion as why they were talking like they were, and the number. Obviously, she knows how many people are in a crew, so I took that like James did to allude to the fact that some people may be dead, and also, as we know, one of them's phased.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at, because I wondered that too, but. Me, it almost felt like when he said 73, but there's only supposed to be 72. And that's kind of wondered why 73. I mean, it wasn't a...
Where did all these people come from?
Yeah, right. That's the only reason I could say she was confused. She didn't look sad that, you know, 300 people died.
Oh, they're very stoic, the Romulans.
Yeah, but that is true.
The other thing with this is, if you think about it, is basically this is a scout ship, because we see this ship in Deep Space Nine, and it's a scout ship. They must have been really, really crowded on that ship to have that many people on there.
Yeah, well, we don't know how many they began with, but it just felt weird hearing her say 73.
But even 73 on that ship, it doesn't look that big, right?
So that's what I mean.
It seems like a big number.
What, the Defiant's got a crew of what?
Short.
Isn't the Defiance crew like 80 something?
Yeah, I think more or less.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, before they beam over to the Romulan ship, did you notice that Riker still has an issue with Ro?
Oh, yeah, as if you could miss it.
My goodness. But then again, I guess, you know, that's not a bright idea. It was pretty stupid to say, to begin with.
No, I think it's good that it foreshadows, right? Because you end up in a position later in the show, and I suppose, you know, spoiler warnings here, that they don't end up with a weapon, but their adversary does end up with a weapon, and had Ro taken the phase along with her, they would have had a lot less trouble. So I kind of like how Ro kind of mentions that, oh, this is a bad idea, and she's ultimately proven correct.
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, later on I have in my notes, do you remember... Oh, I gotta think of what that episode name is. The Enemy?
When they're on the planet.
Yeah, and Colin, you were on with us for that one. That's interesting, too, that I bring that up, and you were there, too.
Yeah.
But Geordi says, welcome to the Gorlondon Corps, where no good deed goes unpunished. And when are they going to realize, anytime you deal with the Romulans, they're going to, they're going to screw you over. Even if you're coming to their aid, they're still going to screw you over.
Which in their nature, isn't it? Because they're duplicitous.
Yes.
You know, they always manipulate a situation to solve themselves. You know, and at the end of the day, they don't want this Federation knowing about this technology that they've been working on. So the safest bet would be destroy them so no one knows about it.
So actually, I have to say, Lou, that, I mean, I do actually really like this episode. And I like the fact that really the beginning of the episode just starts up as a bit of a mystery. And then, you know, it's the Rowan Geordi story, how they're going to get back. And I remember watching this thinking, okay, look, you know, these Romulans are not so bad. And isn't it great that everyone's trying to help out? And there are two kind of like, two twists that they do. One with the other Romulan ghost dude that I thought was, at the time, I thought that was jaw-dropping. But then there's also the turn when the Romulans go, well, these guys are sneaking around a bit too much. They might find out our problem. Mm-hmm. Let's blow them up. And you think, oh, Romulans, you couldn't help yourself. You know, these guys are coming to your aid and you're going to blow them up. Do you have to? And I always... I don't know, it's something that always stuck with me, that, yeah, in this episode in particular, no matter how well-intentioned you were, these Romulans aren't your friends, and they will double-cross you if it's in their interest to do so.
Absolutely. Especially when they said, once they go to warp, they will explode. Okay, so if they've gone to warp, they're leaving you. Why do you have to destroy them? It's almost like they do it because they can, or they want to. That's just what they are. I mean, wasn't that... Remember Chakotay's parable about the... What was it? The fox crossing the river and asked the scorpion to take
him? Yeah, the scorpion.
Yeah, and the scorpion said, it's in my nature.
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously that's going to happen when you deal with the Romulan. Okay, so they arrive before... I'm sorry, they arrive and they beam over to the ship to find quite a few dead Romulans lying around. There's a lot of fire, and they're talking in English. I like that, don't you?
Well, that's the universal translator.
Yes, but the crew wasn't on board by at that time. They had to beam on, but before then, they were talking about the little things that were wrong with it, and it was in English. I would have liked to seen, and this is not really a criticism, I could care less... I would have liked to have seen them talking in Romulan until the crew got there, and then poof, it went right over to English because the translator was there. But it's almost like it's a good thing the camera has a universal translator on it. But that's just a nitpick.
Yeah, so you liked it how you would have preferred it how they did it in Discovery when the Klingons were talking to each other, they spoke in Klingon.
No, now that you say that, okay.
So that's the thing I was going to point out, Lou, is that I've always been kind of like theoretically or objectively thinking that's how it should work. But when Discovery chose to do it, you realize, actually, yes, despite everything, from a drama, from a storytelling perspective, it doesn't work. And maybe it should work, but it doesn't. And I think the same thing happens with, you know, I know that there are some movies out there that have managed to have the concept that there's no sound in space, right? So no engines, no bases and all of that stuff. But at the same time, I think from an action-oriented show, it's very, very hard not to have that.
Well, okay, yeah, you make a very good point of comparison with Discovery. I'm talking, but it was only like 4 or 5, 10 seconds tops. Have a little bit of gibberish, no subtitles. Just they were talking in their language about what was going on, and then the big crew beams over, and then boom, it goes right to English because of the translator. But Discovery, on the other hand, is ridiculous because there's lengthy discussions. All you have to read the subtitles. Sometimes you get through the whole subtitle. Sometimes you don't. But yeah, I was thinking no subtitles. Just they were talking in their own language until the crew arrived, and then boom, they translated over. I think it would have been interesting to hear.
Yeah, it would have been an interesting touch, and it only would have been about a minute, and that would have been it. So it wouldn't have been a massive dialogue.
Mm-mm. It was really, really short. Really short till we arrived. Okay, so LaForge and Roe beam back with a Romulan piece of engineering, but during transport, they're lost and presumed dead. And I also noticed that while they were transporting aboard, it was just the two of them. The piece of equipment never got transported over.
Yeah.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, I just now you've mentioned it. Yeah, it just popped into the edge. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah, if they weren't. You could see the stack forming of the two, but not of the piece of equipment. So, I thought that was pretty good.
Maybe it got beamed somewhere else.
Yeah, they might have. You know, we don't know. But we'll find out. Take all transporters offline. So now we cut to commercial. So, what do you think of the teaser?
I think it was a good setup. You know, it makes you wonder what the Romulans were up to straight away. Especially bearing in mind where they are in relation to Federation space, which is never a good thing. So, yeah, I think it was a good opener.
Okay. I agree. Yeah. I mean, you could see him, you know, how long? 14 minutes or whatever it was till we arrive. But then we find out it was a Romulan that was actually in distress, and we're hauling ass to help the Romulans. So maybe it'd be good for our relations.
Okay. Yeah, but they keep saying that, don't they? Every time they help them, they say, let's hope this leads to better relations. Mm-hmm. And it never does.
No, never does. Mm-mm. No, not until Sisko lies to him.
See, but that's dealing with the Romulan on a Romulan's terms. He conned him.
Yes, you're right. You did. I wonder if they ever found out that he lied to him, would it start in a pretty big war between the two? But that, we'll get to there in Lower Pylon 3. Okay, so, wow, Riker sure is strong, isn't he? Worf and Romulan can't move a heavy object, but when Riker tried, did you notice that he just picked the thing up himself and tossed it?
Yeah, but you got to remember he does martial arts.
Ah, I love that. That was funny. Because it looked like Worf and the Romulan weren't quite ready for him to pick it up. He just picked that sucker up and pew. It was pretty cool.
This is obviously where Worf's going along. He's got his Kalinetics program where he beats up aliens on a holodeck. Mm-hmm. He's got his martial arts, his Mach Bar, whereas Riker basically goes into the holodeck and has a fight with an oversized deer stick. So obviously that builds you up a lot, fighting with an oversized deer stick.
What's an air stick?
The cotton, what do you call them in a minute? It's, you know when you got the cotton wool ball on each end of a stick?
Q-tips. Are they Q-tips in the US, or is that a UK thing?
Oh, a Q-tip. Okay, yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, yeah, a little stick with the little fuzzies on each end.
Yeah. What you call them, Q-tips.
Q-tips, yeah. Well, that's probably the brand name of them. I don't know what they would be called, but Q-tips. Okay, gotcha. Air stick. Never heard of an air stick.
Air stick, did you say?
Ear stick. Ear stick.
Yeah, a stick for your ear.
Ear stick. E-A-R stick. Gotcha. You guys are teaching me a lot here.
Man, like what else are you going to call a stick? You stick it to your ear.
Something painful.
Q-tip.
Q-tip. I don't know. Yeah, you're right. What the hell is a Q-tip? I mean, why not call it a fuzz tip? Anyway. But Data arrives, and he's able to shut the door. They were able to eject the core. It imploded, then exploded. Shook everybody, but we're fine. We're good.
Yeah, because they extended the shields around the ship.
Yes, extended the shields. Doesn't that make the shields a little less effective?
Yeah, it should do. But that's okay. I mean, if you're going to lose, 1% of your shield power due to the explosion, and if you extend them, it's only 2%, then it doesn't really matter.
Mm. Okay. So Picard goes to sickbay, and while he's heading there, he walks right past Ro laying in the hallway. I mean, how rude does he have to be just to walk right past her? Percy thinks she's dead, and then he walks past her. Oh, that's not true. Okay. She wakes up and finds out nobody can see her.
I quite like the fact that, I mean, first of all, I do like the opener here and the fact that, Geordi and Ro end up dead. I think that's a quite good kind of teaser introduction. Mm-hmm. But then I also like the way that they reveal, right, that they reveal that Ro is not technically dead or is more of a spirit kind of thing. And the effect that they do, and she kind of wanders around and she tries to catch people's eyes and she tries to go into the door, and they film it in a way that doesn't 100% reveal that she's kind of out of phase with reality. And I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, because she doesn't know she's out of phase.
No.
So she dodges the doors and stuff like that as well.
Right, she can't get through the door and excuse me, I need some help.
Yeah, I'm and when the door opens, she kind of skirts around it so the door doesn't touch her.
Right. You know what would be interesting is when she was trying to get this woman's help, she's, excuse me, I need some help. Well, damn you, and try to punch her in the face and let her hand go through her skull. I think that would have been more interesting than her trying to slap Crusher's computer.
Yeah. See, that's another thing that I like about this episode, is they tell it from Ro's viewpoint,
mm-hmm.
rather than doing the obvious thing and telling it from Geordi's viewpoint, because he's a main character. So,
yeah. That's another thing I also notice is when she believes she's dead, he won't accept that he's dead, even though, Crusher makes out their death certificates, she watches it. I like the fact that each of them have the way of dealing with this situation on their own, where she needs to make peace and say goodbye, and he needs to cling on to the fact that he can't be dead. It just can't be possible. And I'm going to figure a way out of this situation while you go make peace. I like that.
Yeah, didn't she reference her religion as what she believes is going on?
Yes. Vorhats or something like that? I mean, would that be like ghosts?
I suppose it'd be ghosts or spirits trapped between worlds.
Right. And that'd be interesting to think that people that have died are still walking around the house. That does raise a really bizarre feeling if that was the case, that somebody who like died in your house is still wandering around there until they finally move on or something.
Yeah, well, they have multiple TV programs all based on that premise.
Oh yeah, did you see Defending Your Life?
No. I don't think we have that over there.
Yeah, you guys have to see Defending Your Life. It's really cool. He dies, and now he's stuck between Earth and going on. They don't ever describe it as heaven. They don't describe it as God. They call it moving onward. But, it's really interesting. He has to defend his life. 9 days of his life has to be defended as to whether he has conquered his fears enough to move on, or he gets to go back and do it again. It's a really interesting movie.
Yeah. The thing and all with the afterlife part is because Ro thinks she's dead, there's the parts where she believes she has to make peace with people.
Yeah.
And I did like the bit where she's like, she goes to Picard to make a peace, and she says, like, even I'm dead, you can't hear me, and I'm still scared of you.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And then, of course, Geordi walks in. Excuse me, Captain. I tell you, I laughed out loud. Every time I see that, excuse me, Captain, I just burst out laughing. Because she looks over at him like, why would you even bother? That is good.
The thing is, right, is that Ro is much more of a kind of like a broken character, right? Much more of a... She has a lot more to her than Geordi does. And in particular, how she would deal with... The relationships that she clearly hasn't, you know, got perfect yet, and then her new ship, etc. So I think it's very, very clever and very, very rewarding to see the story told from Ro's perspective. Because look, Geordi's going to go off and he's trying to do his science tech stuff, and that's great. If the story was that Ro would help him along, and just do the same thing, it's a lot less interesting from a character development perspective. And I think, you know, this episode does have a huge amount of character development for Ro. And I think one thing that often goes commented on is that, you know, Ro is, she really doesn't have that many episodes of TNG, but when she is on, in a lot of cases, there's a lot of character development that goes on in the background. You know, they're not Ro-centric episodes per se, but I remember when Disaster was on and, you know, you get to see a side of Ro and you get to know what kind of person Ro is. And similarly, in this episode, we know what kind of person Ro is, including her religion, including the fact that she's fearful of or apprehensive around Picard, the fact that she really wants to know what exactly Riker wants to say about her at her funeral. I think all of this is very, very good, good development on the character that we really don't have a huge amount of time with.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so let's see. I notice also with... did you notice on Dr. Crusher's computer she had her appointment for the day? Or for the week? It says on Monday she has two follow-up sessions. One on child psychology. An annual career counseling session. And one personal counseling session. On Tuesday she has more personal counseling sessions. On Wednesday, more personal counseling sessions. And I was thinking, what does Deanna have on her schedule? Maybe a little surgeries? Some medical checkups?
Actually, let me just also point out once again what they have done again with Troy in this episode. Because I think Troy is not in this episode. Except for one bit. After the viewer knows that, that LaForge... Actually, I don't think it's before the viewer knows that LaForge and Ro are still alive. I think it's before that. I think we think that LaForge and Ro are dead. And Picard turns over to Crusher and says, can you sense them? And she says, nope. And said, okay, that's it. You know, we don't need you for the rest of the episode. Yeah. And I think it's, again, it's unfortunate because they obviously don't want to explain whether or not Troy can sense the presence of these phased individuals. And they kind of just sidestep the entire issue. It's a little bit of a waste.
I don't know why she couldn't. I would think she would be able to. I mean, she could sense the emotions of people on a planet while she's on a starship. You would still think that she could sense Geordi and Ro. I do feel something. I feel bewildered, puzzlement.
Yeah, but if they're out of phase with our reality, then she might not be able to sense them.
Okay, if they're out of phase,
are we getting onto this?
Oh, I have to.
What exactly does it mean to be out of phase?
Exactly. If they're out of phase, how are they breathing the oxygen on the ship?
Oh, that's easy. When they went out of phase, the air around them went out of phase as well.
Okay, yeah, okay, fine. That's good. How do they hear? Or how do they see?
How do they see each other? Are they in the exact same phase?
No, but the thing is that if you think about what you're doing, and by the way, you know, I honestly don't care about this, but we've spoken about ramifications of people that are, of vessels that are cloaked. If you think about what cloaking is, it's that you're going to make sure that no light hits you. Or actually, there are two ways you can do it. You can either absorb the light and then emit the light off, or you can kind of bend the light around you. And very often in Star Trek, they talk about bending light around you. But one way or another, right, in order to see something, you have to absorb photons that are being given off or that are being reflected from individuals. Now, if you're out of phase with everything in the universe, you have to be out of phase with the photons as well that are being reflected off Picard's, you know, bald head. But Geordi seems to have no problem seeing them, and Ro has no problem seeing them as well. Another one is that they have no problem hearing Picard or hearing others. Now, what is hearing? Hearing is just that the airwave pressure is going to hit your eardrum. So it's a physical thing that comes and hits you in the ear, and they have no problem with that. They also have no problem walking on floors and gaining traction. And Ro has no problem, when she's shot, falling under gravity. So there's a bit of a... You have to give them a kind of like a get out of jail free card here, because they kind of don't interact with everyone except when they do, when it's needed for the story.
Yeah, the other bit is in all these when they have to chase, and they're literally running through the walls, but they can't see through the walls. So how do they know they're not running into space?
Well, there's even a bit when they are running through the walls, right, where the Romulan shoots a phaser that Ro runs through the wall in order to get away from. Now, I put it to you that if you have a phased phaser that's shooting someone in the phased reality, the wall isn't going to stop the phaser.
No, it shouldn't have.
No, it should just go straight through the wall.
Mm-hmm. At which point, then, the question is, also at the end where they have the phased explosion, they take cover. They take cover behind what? You know, in the phased reality, there's nothing. There's only those two. So there's nothing preventing.
Yeah, because they duck behind a chair, but the chair is out of phase with them. So in their reality, they're ducking behind nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's also the bit with the fact that they can run through walls, but they can run on the floor that they should also be going through.
Sure.
And then when they run through the walls, and they knock the Romulan out of the spaceship by knocking him through a wall.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, right, turbolifts. They get into a turbolift. Now, how does a turbolift take you someplace? Well, it's doing nothing more than just physically lifting you up through the pressure it's going to force onto your feet by elevating the platform. Now, you know, usually in day-to-day life, we don't think of these things as being, you know, big people pushing us, but that's what it's doing. So if you can walk through a wall without pushing much, you know, exerting much energy, then you should certainly be able to, you wouldn't be able to be pushed or elevated upwards from the turbo lift.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, once the turbo lift started moving, you just stay still.
Unless, here's what I would I think we would avoid this discussion if maybe Geordi had said, oh no, our deck plating, nothing will ever go through it, even if it's out of phase. Boom, done.
Because no, but that wouldn't work, because then you've got when they're running through the walls.
Right, no, just the deck plating. Not the walls, just the deck plating.
Okay, so the thing is, Lou, if you can't go through the deck plating, let's just assume that you can't, then you also can whack the deck plating and then be prevented from going through it. And as soon as you're in that territory, you can just sit there and do a little bit of a bongo dance, and someone's going to hear you, because you're going to be, you know, the deck plating exists in the normal reality. You're going to be hitting it. It's going to be giving off some type of energy as you kind of make collisions with it. So you should be able to sit there and drum on the deck plating.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, yeah, one thing I notice is that it seems like whenever we see a visual of like an elevator or something, we see the deck between this door and that door. I don't know, the Farrah Jacques episode. I mean, that's some pretty long flooring. I mean, there's some thick flooring between the ceiling of the deck below and the floor of the deck above. There's a lot of space there. So no, I don't know.
I'm not doubting that there's a lot of space.
Well, the major flaw with all of this is the fact that the way they're detecting is by using the Romulan phaser, which is out of phase. So if the Romulan phaser is out of phase, then they wouldn't pick anything up.
It's creating the chronons.
Yes, so I was under the impression when they're talking about it being out of phase, they're talking about it being out of phase-ish. So you kind of... When Geordi, as out of phase, interacts with normal phased material, it kind of provides a little bit of resistance, which is when the chronoton field appears. So that's how I read it. So... But all of this is just, I mean, I think all of this is nonsense, and
it is.
But it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter. You got to let it go, because here's one more for you. They not only do they not go through the floor. Did you notice when they were examining the transporter room, Geordi was sitting on the transporter pad and even had his hand propping him up on the pad? I mean, obviously he should at least went through that. He also touched the computer screen. Was able to touch it and not go through it, whereas Ro's hand went through Crusher's computer. This is all you just have to accept.
Yeah, it's like the Romulan. The Romulan was sitting in the chair.
Yeah.
He wasn't sitting in the chair. He was squatting, and he has extremely muscular thighs that keeps him but a millimeter away from the actual sitting position.
Absolutely. But I liked what you... I think one of you two said that. I love the reveal of him, because we see him a couple times. He's just sitting there. He looks like one of the guys just sitting there. You had no idea that he was actually phased till he walks through his own equipment. Okay.
Yeah, no, I think that's wonderful. And I watched this episode as I was growing up, and when they do the reveal, it's completely out of nowhere. And actually, it goes to show that, you know, Geordi and Ro, they're not being... It doesn't occur to them, I don't think, that someone else could be phased. And frankly, as I was watching it, it didn't occur to me that someone else would have been phased either. It's a transporter malfunction. They were together. So, yeah, it makes sense. But they kind of do beam over... Well, they don't beam over. They get over on the shuttle to the Romulan ship. And then the Romulan is clearly being very careful so that he doesn't get identified. And what is Geordi doing? He's poking his head into the... he's poking his head all over the place, and it's very, very clear for someone that is phased that dude over there is also phased. He's coming in, he's completely out of place, and and kudos to the Romulan for at least being tactical in how he goes about his new existence as a phased dude.
You know, and that's an interesting point. How did he know he was phased? Why wasn't he as confused as Geordi and Ro?
But he's just more... He probably found out he was phased when he tried to brush his teeth. and he's obviously just more disciplined than our two heroes.
Well, everybody in Romulan is more disciplined than
him. Yeah, you've also got to remember that he was actually working on the ship that had the phased technology. So I dare say they had development accidents.
So maybe he would have been the 74th person, and that's why she's so confused.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. That's what I figured. Okay, so anyway, Data begins reading the chronoton fields, and it takes a while for Geordi to realize how he's reading them. And it was pretty fun watching Geordi create more as Data's going, what the hell is this? Oop, here's it again. Here it is again. Here it is again. Come on, Data, think about it. Until he finally quits and walks away.
So here's the thing that I didn't quite appreciate with Geordi here. Geordi, he's doing random like pokes, and he's telling Data, it's not just random, and he's doing random pokes. Now, if he had done something, he could have very easily put across like a pattern, right? If he did, you know, okay. One sign of intelligence, right, is, you know, somehow tap out the prime numbers or tap out a sequence that's very observably, you know, not going to be naturally occurring. So he could have got that across. But even if you couldn't tap out numbers and you have to be more broad stroke than that, you know, hit the four corners and then, you know, do you know, then go backwards and then go forwards or do something like that. But he's just sitting there doing random stuff, and then he's confused as to why a machine isn't picking up that this random stuff isn't just random.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he wasn't helping himself.
That makes sense.
A tip for anyone, if anyone finds themselves in the position where they are phased and they need to communicate with the rest of us, do something that clearly indicates there's intelligence on the other side, rather than just someone poking randomly onto a table.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll go say goodbye. Okay, so what do you think of LaForge and Roe on the shuttle with the Data and Worf as they're planning out their funerals? That does sound a little creepy. Listening to them plan their funeral?
No, I like all of this, right? Because it gives you an opportunity for a certain amount of character development that you're not going to see under ordinary circumstances. So, you know, the fact that Worf could have spoken like this when Yar died or whatever, but you know, it reminds you of what kind of person Worf is and how he views life and death and honor and service. It also shows, you know, Data in a particularly good light or a particularly unique light, whereby, you know, Geordi is no longer there and he's trying to do what's best. And I think that, you know, the scenario is very unique, and as a result, you know, next week we're not going to be having these insights into their personality. And I think that this episode is such a unique setup that, you know, people honestly think that two people are dead. You've got people questioning the afterlife in Geordi, trying to find a rational way out. You've got someone who's probably been lost or probably has been slightly away from her religious side, having to embrace it as she believes that she has actually finally, you know, got to the end of her life. And I think it's a nice framing for those questions.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and we get a couple good stories about LaForge. He made me feel good. He made me feel special. And when I met him, I made some comment about the engine efficiency, and he was up all night. So what are we going to say about Ro? We'll never know. We'll never know. And I do like later where she shoots him right through the head. Riker, that is.
It's very much a Ro thing to do.
Oh, absolutely. So, the Bajoran death chant. It's a shame we never get to see that. Do you remember anywhere in DS9 them discussing the Bajoran death chant?
No.
No, me either. There's another missed opportunity. 90% of DS9 is Bajorans, but yet we don't ever get a death chant. Okay.
Well, I was going to say that, I mean, maybe it's not that unusual. Just given that it's you know, they're not going to publicize, like, you know, deeply held religious events and the like. Now, by the way, they also mentioned Geordi. So just my mind's wandering. Geordi at the end of the episode mentions he didn't eat for 2 days. And I also assume he didn't drink for 2 days either, because the same logic applies. Do you think they had to relieve themselves in any way? Do you think that, you know, by the end of the episode, they had a little bit of matter on the side that was still out of phase with reality, just sitting there?
It's still out of phase. Well, we still don't even know what they do. I mean, for all we know, the computer beams the poo out of them. But, yeah, you're right. Somewhere in the hallways, there's phased poo-poo. Just sitting there.
So you think that the next captain, obviously, you know, there wasn't a next captain of the Enterprise, but had the next captain of the Enterprise come along and decided to run one of these scans or one of these decontaminations, they find that there's a whole little mess that appears wherever his ready room, because he unfazes.
Well, there was no next captain because it got blew up.
Yes, I know, which is lucky for them.
Well, there was Jellicoe. Jellicoe probably could have ran a phase once in a while. We don't know what he did.
Yeah, he weren't on there long enough to worry about that. He was more concerned again with the Livingston.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, LaForge is making more chronotons that Data can't figure out why they're forming, but we get around that. And then, of course, Rose running around the ship with the Romulan chasing her. And now he's floating through space forever, phased. Does that mean... Okay, here we go, Colin. Let me ask you this. I believe you said there was a bubble of air formed around them when they were phased. Is that Romulan still alive, floating through space with his own bubble of air?
Well, no, because eventually you would consume the air. You know, it's like if you get one of them big plastic bowls that people roll downhill and go on water with and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's only so much air inside them.
Did you see that on Facebook?
I don't do Facebook.
Okay. Well, you mentioned the ball with the people inside him. There was a video I saw where people were running downhill while the ball with two, three people were actually chasing him and just knocking him, rolling right over him as they, you know, just like a ball just killing everybody as it came by. That looked fun. That actually looked fun. But anyway, a different story. So he's floating around, he's alive for about a day or so, and then all of a sudden he runs out of oxygen and suffocates in his own little bubble.
But by the way, I don't buy this idea of it people running out of oxygen, because they would have run out of oxygen long before this, right?
Yeah, two days.
When you get beamed in, even if there's a vast amount of oxygen that comes in with you, it's going to disperse. You're going to disperse. If you think about in the phased world, you're bringing in air that is at one atmosphere over into a vessel that has zero atmosphere. So it's going to just completely disappear very, very quickly. But it doesn't matter.
So no, it doesn't matter.
I can only assume that the Romulan's going to kind of spin throughout. I mean, it's a pretty impressive way to go, right? If you are going to go, and if you can survive without breathing, which Geordi and Rose seem to be able to do, you know, being pushed out into the oblivion of space is, you know, pretty good.
So basically, eventually he would just starve to death.
Yeah, true. But for a while, it'd be a wild ride, though. Okay. So I gotta be honest about something. I want my funeral to be just like Rowan the Forge's.
As in someone will come in with a disruptor and start shooting people in the head.
Well, that, but I mean what Data does. That's completely unusual, but it was so cool. And Rowan's like, this is our memorial service? And you know, LaForge's like, yeah, why not? I agree with him. Why not? That'd be a great service to have. Can you guys make sure that happens when I die?
We will try. Okay. Actually, it reminded me of something that's happened in the UK. And I don't know if this has gone further. But obviously, you know, our national sport here is football, as in the proper football, not the football that's basically rugby in protective armor.
Oh, soccer.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Indeed. Association football. whenever people die, right, people connected with the game, you know, old players or whatever, you know, up until maybe around 10 years ago, I think, there would always be like a moment of silence that they would give them. And that's kind of been transformed over the last 10 years or so to be actually like a moment of applause instead. So whenever any kind of big, you know, greats of the game die, we don't typically observe moments of silence, but instead, you know, there's the applause that is given from the stadium. And then it's very much a similar way of an expression and a celebration of people who haven't actually done well, rather than people feeling down.
I'll be right back. I'll explain it in a second.
Well, I suspect it has something to do with those dogs.
Wonder what's got him roiled.
Someone's coming. No doubt someone's popped by. It's usually going to be a... It'll be... Oh, someone's at the door.
Maybe it's Pizza Guy.
What was that?
It sounded like a TNG door chime.
It did.
Maybe it's Lou's text tone. I don't think Lou's out of phase.
Lou, you must have a much bigger house than I do, because that was an impressive walk.
Sorry. The dogs were barking, and I could look out on our outside camera. It was a post office, and it looked like I had to sign for a package, but in the end, she ended up leaving it, so sorry.
And the dogs let you know that you had to sign for the package.
No.
You've got them really quite well trained.
She had a clipboard in her hand. I thought, I wonder if I got a sign for it. That's why I was running it. But something for my daughter. I'm not sure what it is. Anyway, let's see here. So hopefully you guys weren't going on while I was gone. But if you were, now I got to try and find this in the recording.
No, we were just commenting on how big your house must be and how you're not out of phase.
Yeah, it's not big, but when you're old and fat and you have to run up the steps, it's not fun. So, you guys, you got a choice here. You can become old or you can become fat, but don't do both, please. It's not worth it.
Well, getting old is inevitable.
Mm-hmm. There you go. So don't do both. That's what I'm saying. Okay, so anyway, during the funeral, the ship needs to get to Garadius 4 for a diplomatic mission, and we need to get there now. So it's time to warp out of here. But no, wait, we need to get rid of some more chronotons. So you guys think... Okay, hold on. Let me think here. They're out of phase. The Romulan disruptor explodes. Or implodes and then explodes, whatever. The chair between them wouldn't give them any cover. It'd just go right through the chair.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on which rules of laws of physics we're using, which seem to be relatively flexible in this episode. But yeah, conceptually, I don't think it would provide any cover.
That makes sense. Right. Well, what if... Okay, so what if they ran out of the room? I mean, at some point, the wide area that the disruptor would cover has to dissipate somewhere.
But they had to be in the room for when data triggered the particle.
Right. Right. So what do you think of that solution, though? Let's turn that puppy up. Actually, I like the fact that, you know, when the disruptor went off, you know, who was it, Picard and...
Picard and Data.
Data could see them a little bit.
Now, do you think that when they did this after the original attempt failed, how do you guys read Worf's reaction? Because from in my mind, the first kind of attempt to, you know, decloak them, dephase them, I kind of feel that it probably worked, but because it was Worf looking at them, he kind of just thought, oh, it's, you know, one of these visions that we generally have. And then just thought nothing more of it.
I wondered that too, but you know, when I looked at it again today, I kind of thought, no, Worf didn't see him at all. He was just happened to look over at the party.
I think Worf saw them, and I think he thought, you know, I'm on a vision quest, so let's keep this personal. I mean, it's like, you know, if you are going to come out and, you know, present, it's like the aliens, right? When the aliens do come and they present themselves to the humans, when you're only presenting it to the drunk humans in the middle of nowhere in, you know, rural Montana, you've got a credibility problem. And I think that Worf was the same.
Ah, I see. Yeah, if I say anything about seeing dead people, they'll relieve me of duty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that could be.
Yeah, Captain, I saw them. I saw dead people. So, Worf, you're relieved of duty.
Yes.
Be gone.
Yes. We're going to have to bring Counselor Troy back, who I didn't see in the funeral at all, by the way. Okay. So,
she must have been off this episode. She must have just... I mean, it's either the easiest check she's ever made, or she had something else to do.
Right, because I don't think she said one word, did she?
She mentions right at the beginning that she can't sense anyone.
No.
And I don't even know if she said that or if she just shook her head.
She shook her head. That was it. Yeah, she walked up to Data's console as he was starting the diagnostic, and then, yeah, no. That's all she did. She shook her head no. Okay, so they figure out, let's get the disruptor to explode, and that increases the chronotons by 3,000%. So let's flood 10 forward. That turned that sucker up as best we can, and that's when they show up. Data, right here! Can you see me? Can you see me? What did we just see? Well, if I'm right... Oh, Data, please be right! Oh, that was a little interesting.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah?
I thought that was... Yeah, I like... So in this episode, I think that Data's relatively well written. So Data does a lot of like good things. So you get to see his kind of human side wants to prepare the funeral. You see him doing, he does the Super Data thing once, I think, on the ship, which is always good.
Yeah.
And a certain bit of naivety going over there and then poking around on their phase drive. But the thing that I did like is that they do write Data as quite rational in this episode. And he, you know, Geordi's trying to communicate with Data and he's trying to get Data to put it all together. And I think that there might be people might feel that Data's a little bit slow at putting patterns together, but the truth of the matter is I think humans are generally extremely well designed to see patterns when there are no patterns, in fact. So we're often fooled by randomness in a way, and I think Data isn't. And I kind of like that, you know, I think Data's well written, and when he finally comes around and starts theorizing what has been happening, I think it's kind of like a good high point of the episode.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So they turn up the Anyons, I believe they were called, to the highest level, flood 10 forward, and they decloak.
Okay, well, why do they decloak? I mean, if you think about it, it's... They appear to be in pain as they're being flooded with these things. Mm-hmm. And we seem to accept the fact that a little dose will make them... It makes them hard to phase through things. A heavy dose makes them hurt and makes them come back so that we can see them. Now, if we were to flood them entirely, who's to say we don't just kill them? You know, why are we assuming that they'll come back and they'll stay there? It's a bit of a stretch.
No. Well, hold on. Data says...
You can't have it both ways. You can't say we have to suspend the science and then blame the science.
I know. I agree. Data
says anion emissions are harmful to humans. You can do as much as you want. The only reason they hurt is because it was interacting with their phase or their cloak.
Mm-hmm.
Whichever you want, that's the reason it hurt. But it's a good thing they figured out that, you know, they needed... What if flooding 10-4 didn't work and they were just phased forever? I mean, every time you want to see Geordi, you hit him with a couple anion beams and you can talk to him for a second and then he's gone.
Maybe that's his role for the next 7 years.
Yes, they need to build an anion emitter that goes onto their uniforms to keep them constantly hit with anions. Oh, yeah. Captain, we need to raise a... you know?
Well, you've also got to remember that the Federation have their own interface cloak in another episode.
Yes, they do. Mm.
Oh, yeah, that's coming up, isn't it?
Yeah, Pegasus.
Pegasus. Okay. Okay, so next order of business, time to eat. And boy, do they eat a lot. Geordi eats a lot. Isn't it true that actors hate eating scenes because they do so many takes?
Yes.
I think even Marina Sirtis said that she has a spit bucket next to her... Whenever she has to take chocolate in and that she does it over and over and over, she just spits it back out.
Yeah, and Patrick Stewart has been quoted as saying that he got fed up of Earl Grey tea because he had to drink so much of it.
Oh, really? Well, they could have put anything in that, in his drink. They wouldn't know.
And you've also got to remember that even when they are doing a 18 scene, you can guarantee that food's cold.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so... Oh, hey, what's the name of the episode that you just said? With the phased cloak?
The Pegasus. Season 7.
Is it season 7? Okay, that's why I can't find it. So it's going to... Oh, yeah, it's episode 12.
Episode... Hell no, I was going to say 12.
Yeah, 12.
Because it's the 12 and... 11 and 12 is the it's Parallels and the Pegasus on the same VHS. And it was the midpoint of the season.
Really? Okay, yeah. Okay, anyway. I just left you guys a message. Shh. So, I guess that's pretty much it, right?
I think it is, yeah. It is from my
perspective. I don't know what you mean by that message, but yes.
Okay. So, Pegasus. Okay, so I think it's now time to what do we do? Rate this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. And Colin, you're the guest. Why don't you start us off? Your final thoughts and ratings.
I like these. Like James says, you have to suspend the science in order to enjoy the show. But hey, it's science fiction, so that's fine. You know, there's some great people in this show. Susan Thomas, who later becomes the Ball Queen. Thomas Kapoch.
Does she?
Yeah, Susan Thomas plays the Ball Queen.
Wow, I didn't realize that. Okay, that's something for me.
Yeah. Susan Thomas plays the Ball Queen. Thomas Kapoch pops up in various other episodes of Star Trek. We get a focus of an episode that's not viewed from a main character's point of view, which I like. So we get it to see from Roy Callan's point of view. This also leads in, like we said, to Pegasus, because there's tie-ins with the phase technology in Pegasus. So there's lots of little snippets and lots of little angles in this. So there's a lot of depth in this episode. And also, it's an enjoyable episode to watch. It's a good romp. The invisible poop aside, which is probably floating around some planet somewhere when the Enterprise blew up, out of phase. I really enjoyed this. I happily watched it again for this episode, and it's just a good Star Trek episode, full stop. So I'll give you 4 out of 5.
Okay, yeah, I just looked up Susan, and you're right. Yeah, she's in 4 different things here. Even Lenora Khan on DS9 for Rejoined. Fascinating.
Yes, she's the Ball Queen.
Yep.
Yeah.
And what's really interesting is how didn't they have like 3 different Borg queens and they all really remarkably look alike?
No, you're thinking of Zial in DS9. There was 3 Zials in DS9. There's 2 Borg queens.
But the statement, but they all remarkably look alike, is not entirely accurate.
No, the Zials in DS9 do not look alike.
No.
And one of the Zials ended up as Orion's slave girl, right? In the Enterprise season 4, what was it called?
Yes, she's the Enterprise. When it's revealed that it's the Orion women who really have the power.
Yeah, which I could agree with. Okay, so for me, I went into this episode thinking it possibly deserved a 5. But I'm somewhat confused as to what to really give it. You know, I like the story of LaForge and Ro being phased. I like that each is dealing with the situation in their own way. And in the end, it calls into question everything Ro believes in and finds out she believes that she's actually wrong about everything she believed. But actually, since she was never dead, there's nothing to be in conflict just yet. But she does say she doesn't believe in the afterlife. So, don't know. She'll find out when it really happens. We all find out when it really happens.
if defending your life is the way to go, I'm looking forward to that, actually, because when you go into the past lives pavilion and you see what all the lives you've been before, that's some fascinating stuff, and you guys gotta see it. I may have even put that on that thumb drive to you, James, so you might want to look for it.
I will.
Or are you saying you lost it?
No, I'm going to say that I do not acknowledge that I took any illegal copies or bootleg copies of any copywritten material out of the US. I mean, I'm trying to get back into the country in 4 months' time.
Oh.
I don't want this stuff going around.
No, I mean, that's not what I mean. It was supposed to be on the TV that you were watching while you were in Las Vegas. You didn't see it. I think you saw it and you just don't remember.
Perhaps.
Yes. Along with the Ocean's 11 and 12 and 13. But anyway, so. Now, there are a couple plot holes in the story. And the only one that I think is insane is the fact that they can walk through the floor, on the floors, and put their hands on devices, but float through other devices. But that's okay. The writers probably couldn't come up with a reasonable answer for it, so they decided to not even bother. Because you'd like to think that Ronald D. Moore is smart enough to say, well, why are they walking on the floors? I think they just said, ah, hell with it. Let it go. But in the end, it's a good enough story. And perhaps I can't, in all fairness, give this a perfect score to a 5. So I agree with Colin that it's a 4. James, explain why I'm wrong.
Okay, you're both wrong. Obviously, you have to both be wrong because you both agree with each other. I have no problem whatsoever giving this a 5 out of 5. None whatsoever. This is you know, from a science accuracy perspective, it's nonsense. But really, what is the point? Or what is really being done here? They have a sci-fi setting on which they are projecting kind of like a big question, which is, hey, you know, what happens after you die? And that's an interesting story. At the same time, they start the episode, you know, us coming to an aid of someone, and then us, you know, people losing members of the crew. It very quickly turns into the fact that, oh, actually, they're not there. They're merely out of phase, and there's a bit of a countdown to make sure that they can try to come back. We get these huge reveals that the, you know, of Romulans, A, there's an evil Romulan with them, and B, Romulans more evil than you expected them to be, and they're about to blow up the ship. And all of this, I think, gives an intensity to the episode that is really, really good and really enjoyable. You know, at the same time, whilst you have this underpinning of this like sci-fi concept of what actually, you know, these people have been phased and they have to find a way back, and the interaction with Data, at the same time as that, you've got all of the character development, all of the, you know, all of the stuff is able to be written about the characters and how they interact in this particular case that you don't obviously want to have happen, because you don't want to write Geordi and Ro off as having died halfway through season 5. So I really love this episode. I think it's you know, it's more than a pleasure to watch, and you know, it might not be the greatest episode of Star Trek ever made, and it clearly isn't, but I have no complaints.
Okay, so is that a 5?
It is a 5, yeah.
It is a 5. Okay, then it is a 5.
And here's the problem that I see, by the way. What did I give the last episode we reviewed? Because I fear that I'm on a bit of a flight plan in the coming weeks.
Well, Iborg was the last one, and that was a 5.
Yeah.
Of course it was a 5.
Yeah.
And then Imaginary Friend got a 2, and The Perfect Mate got a 1.
Okay, well, don't worry about Imaginary Friend or The Perfect Mate. What's the longest streak of 5s that I've given so far? Because I think that might get challenged. Without wanting to give away any spoilers, of course.
Right. So far, in Season 5, you've had 2 that have been 5 and 5. That was Unification 1 and 2. And back-to-back was Iborg in the next phase. That's for Season 5.
Yeah.
Season 4, you were kind of stingy with your 5s. I think you gave, like 4 of them. 5 of them got 5s out of 26.
but there was no back-to-back fives.
You know, one of these days, we should review how we felt, like, overall. I have no recollection, and maybe I'll be surprised about how negative or positive I have been.
Yeah, yeah. I wish there was a way that we can actually share a file over the internet to where you can, you know, you can have a network drive on your computer that would actually call up files on one of my network drives here. There's got to be a way. If we could figure that out.
Are you basically just asking for like a shared either Dropbox or OneDrive or Google Drive?
Well, yes, but when okay,
any of those solutions work, right?
Okay, so Google Drive. Let's say we do that. When you save it, will it save it to the Google Drive?
Yeah. You can make it so it syncs with. Yeah, you can.
What about OneDrive?
As long as it's a shared document, it's fine.
What about OneDrive? Will that do the same thing?
Yeah. So you can send me a link to a document that you choose to make public in your OneDrive, and I can I can edit and I can sync to it.
Okay, let's figure that out. But I'm sure Colin wants to go to bed now, so we'll do that.
They figured this out a while ago.
Well, I mean, we got to figure out how to do it for each other.
I know.
I don't know what to do right now, but okay. So
Dropbox is that. It's easiest.
That's what I was thinking. Dropbox probably would be, and then you can have it right on the desktop. Okay. All right, Colin. So, gee, when are you going to be back again? I seem to forget.
Oh, I think it's next week.
Next week for a... Ah, it's called the Inner Light.
Yeah, somewhere about a flute or something like that, I don't know.
A flute. A pan flute. And it's where Deep Space Nine got their hard time from.
Well, we'll do all that next week.
Yeah, let's do that next week.
A mystery of unknown origin.
Record is sickbay. Captain's hurt.
Traps Picard in another world.
My prisoner here.
And another man's soul.
This is not my life.
Destined to spend eternity on a doomed planet.
You simply cannot let this civilization die.
Until fate.
Cayman.
Strikes a fatal blow.
The captain is under attack.
I'm losing him.
On Star Trek, The Next Generation.
So everybody, join us next week. Or next time. You never know when they come up for episode 25 of season 5, and that's The Inner Light. And again, we will have Mr. Colin on. Anything else, guys?
Nope. Thanks for listening.
Absolutely. Take care and good night.
Okay, good night. I think we should have thanked Colin for turning up, but...
I did, didn't I?
Yeah, he did that at the start.
I think I did a couple times.
We can always do it next week.
Thank you, Colin. We can.
Got it.
Thank you, Colin. Good night.
Good night.